Hello and welcome to The Broken Gun. We're a man down today, so it's just me, Johnny Carter.
Me, Lloyd Patterson.
And myself, Bloody Bruce the Shooting.
All right, mate.
Good day, mate.
What's going on, you pack of pricks?
It's all very exciting, mate. All very exciting. We haven't recorded in a while. We've all been up to a lot.
Haven't we just?
Where is Eddie?
Well, I've heard, and obviously don't... this isn't gospel. I mean, I wouldn't be held to it in the court of law, but I heard that after the Barbary incident, he'd been for a shooting lesson with Ed that turned into a prostate exam that wound up a weird amalgam of the two. And as a result, he's unable to sit down or stand up.
And now he never since left Ed Solomon's basement.
I actually don't think that's hearsay, because I think they've both put them on their story of Ed getting a prostate exam from Ed and a shooting lesson. So I think it's factual.
It was like an Ed sort of human caterpillar of Ed on Ed action.
Yeah.
Right.
It's big yin and yang of Ed. All right, Bruce, you kick it off. What have you been up to?
Mate, clay target shooting. Well, lots of clay target shooting. Not hitting a whole heap. I think I've found Ed's form, to be fair. I've had three absolute nightmares in a row.
Your nightmares are still high 80s, though, so let's put it into perspective.
It's been low 80s, high 70s. I'm not gonna fluff it up for Instagram. It hasn't been great. It's still shooting to my grade, but yeah, I just haven't really found the groove lately. And I do know what it's about. And it is an easy fix. It's just life gets in the way sometimes, in all honesty.
That is the most truth ever spoken on this podcast.
Yeah. It's one of those things. You know what really helps diagnosing these issues? If you sit back and say, why have I shot so poorly? I write a bit of a diary after I shoot each time. And if you can look back to the last time that you shot and go, what did I do differently now to then? It becomes extremely apparent what you did differently. One was put in effort and the other one was not, so...
But the very act of keeping a diary is effort, right? So I think there's a willingness to do things that separates people who are genuinely, like, good to people who are, like, okay, at club level sort of thing. And if you are willing to, like, keep a diary of your shooting and, like, what you ate and how you felt, blah, 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 then that sets you apart. You're aiming at a higher strata of performance than the rest of us, shall we say.
Would you look
it
at
It takes this? 10 minutes.
Eddie hasn't been here for 5 minutes and we're talking about clay shooting.
Well, you did ask the clay shooter of the group what he's been doing.
What he's been up to. Yeah, exactly.
I wonder what that was going to turn into.
A lot of those trips, actually, a lot of those shoots involved extensive travel. So there was a few weekends away in there, catching up with mates. One of them was a two-day shoot. So I've had a bit of fun. In
a lot
all
of beers, a lot of driving. Yeah,
lots of beers and driving. Yep, dodging dead kangaroos on the side of the road.
Is that sporting fitask?
Fitask. It's all fitask.
All fitask all the time.
Yep, we don't shoot sporting at all. There's maybe one competition a year that they have a sporting shoot. Crazy. It's just not the done thing. I don't know why, because it'd be a whole lot easier to set. So after the last,
they get a lot more people through.
Oh, well, there's only X amount of people that come to these events anyway.
Yes, and
we'd all be done by 10:30, and we're all Australians, so we'll be drunk by 10:45. You just can't be drunk that early in the morning.
Well, you can.
Frowned upon, apparently, in some circles.
But I guess you've also been doing a shit ton of driving because nothing's near your house.
No, there has been a lot of driving involved, which hasn't been too bad. The weather over here has been absolutely terrible this week, so there's been no practice or...
How far away is your average shoot competition?
Oh, I would say minimum 2 hours. The one I was at on the weekend was 5.
I won't complain about driving to Lloyd's, Ben.
No.
Yeah.
It's. I must admit, that 5 hours drive is 500 kilometres, so it's not like you're driving 5 hours for 250 kilometers. I think that I'd get the hump on with that, where they're just big open roads. It's nice.
Yeah, you can just stick the cruise on and, like, fall asleep for a few hours. Like at the road train drivers do, although they're probably off their kippers on, you know, meth.
Yeah.
What are you high on today? Dead hookers.
Meth.
Welcome to the meth train, boys.
When I had three cups of coffee to wash down the taste of the dead hooker.
Nice. Welcome to Australia.
Right, what is that you're drinking right now?
Meth.
Coffee and dead hookers.
Iced coffee. Keep it in the iced same chiller as my dead hookers. Oh. Welcome back to the Broken Gallons, more like it, isn't it?
That's better. Yeah.
So
apart from that, not a whole lot. It's just been work and clay shooting.
That's work, eat, sleep, shoot, repeat.
That's correct. Yep. Hence why we've been all been a little bit quiet on the podcast front, because we've had stuff on.
Yeah.
Live. Absolutely. Instead of podcasts. Work.
Yeah.
We have been busy boys, haven't we? We've done like what? Two clear tours? Is it two clear tours or one clear tour since we last podded?
Two, maybe.
Two. Might be two. I think you guys have done two, yeah.
Yeah, I think we've done two. We did Thimbleby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Bywell.
And then Bywell. And I've done a few on top of that as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you've been a very busy boy. You've been all over the place filming.
Yeah, mate, no rest for the wicked, right?
Absolutely, but yeah.
Before we move on to us, I just want to hit Bruce. What would be your two or three top tips when you say you keep your diary? What are your two or three most common fuck ups? What are the two or three things that you would suggest to people that they might think about?
One of them is out of your control, which is your personal life. If you're busy at work or you have things that stress you, that's one of the main contributing factors. If you've got other stuff in your head, clay targets isn't going to take a priority in your brain to say, hey, let's go out and hit these. The other one is absolutely free, but you just don't do it that often, is hydration. If you're not hydrated, I don't personally tend to shoot well. My eyes go a bit funny.
It's so important in many sports, but like people don't give it enough.
Well, I was chatting to a mate of mine today about it. I was a little bit dehydrated, blah, 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 blah. I was chatting to him and he goes, so he's a pilot. He's a pleasure pilot. Flies for fun. He goes, when you fly stunt planes, you drink 2 liters of water before you get on because your body is a sponge and nobody in shooting ever cares about that.
Yeah.
That when your sponge, especially the one inside the big jar, is dry, it's like a dry sponge. It's crispy. It's shit. It doesn't do what it's supposed to do.
Yeah. That's the main contributing factor is, I think, hydration. And the work, personal life, if you're super busy, I just forget to drink water. And it hasn't been ultra warm, but it's been warm enough that you can get a sweat on during the day and you just forget to do it, I guess, which it's a free thing to do. And I don't know why I don't do it, but there you go. If I really wanted to be any better, I would knuckle down. And if I've got the time to write a diary, sure, I've got time to drink some water, but I didn't.
I can see some TGS / Broken Gun merch here. It's a race to the finish line. Sports drink bottle. And
well, like a Camelback that's specifically designed so that the neck's big enough to fit a Hex Cider thing in.
I need more than one customer to prototype an idea.
The grounds that we shot at on the weekend, it's a private farm. The terrain is absolutely phenomenal. And we've been shown two new sets of Vitas grounds that we can use. Our national championships is at that ground next year. And we had a look at a couple of new spots. One of them is called the Devil's Marbles. And it's these huge, big outlying boulders, massive, big things. And the other one's another big quarry that overlooks an army spy base station, like some satellites. They're like these big golf balls. You can sort of drive in and have a look, but if you get too close, there's guys wandering around with guns protecting them. They are the terrain is phenomenal. One of them is a 200-foot drop off the top of a cliff that you can stand at the top or at the bottom. It's amazing. Some of the terrain at that ground is world class. It's just unfortunate that it's miles from anywhere.
Those places tend to be remote.
The good ones, good places always are a bastard long way away.
Yeah, I mean, we've always said
for us, that's like an hour, obviously.
Yeah.
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 The on the last podcast we did, Ryan said he walked the office dyke walk,
yeah,
and he said it was quite remote and he didn't see anyone for 17 miles. That sounds like everything's stacked on top of each other, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah. Like, more like 170 miles for you.
Where he did live and where he lives now, you couldn't walk 10 meters without being on someone else's property. So,
yeah.
We should all move to Australia. We should swap countries, yeah, mate. You can come over here.
We would fit.
That'd be nice.
There's no bugger there, so.
So, what have you been up to, Lloyd?
Well, what have I not been up to? we've done a clay tour at Bile, we've done a clay tour at Thimbleby, both of which I guess will be out at some point in the near future.
We did do Thimbleby, we spoke about it in the AMP podcast. Sorry, everyone, you've already heard that story.
Yeah, yeah. Well, then I won't tell it. But we had a fab day at Bile where we did a clay tour, and we shot the test layout for one of the England selection shoots, and had a great deal of fun doing it, and the pro-sporting shoot-off.
The pro-sporting was great fun.
Hilarious fun.
So explain this pro-sporting shoot-off. You had to straight it to win a prize. Was that correct?
No.
Is there money on offer? No?
No. So there is... they've been running the qualification rounds for a little while. And basically, there's 14 targets... seven singles and then seven in a timed the way it works is you shoot seven singles and it's basically each target is worth 1 point, 2 points, 3 points, 4 points, 5 points, blah, blah, blah.
All use of the gun over the seven singles,
right? And then you do them again, but when you call pull, a target comes every 4 seconds.
So it's like a timed known flush, you know, where they're coming from.
Yes.
And
when I shot it with Johnny, it just completely fell apart. Like, in the time drive, I straightened the singles.
Whilst somebody was filming.
Yes. Straight at the singles, Johnny straight at the singles. And then when as soon as somebody hit a stopwatch, I forgot to load the gun. It was carnage.
So, firstly, those singles, you went in there and absolutely dominated. Probably the most pressure I have felt getting into a clay stand in a long time. I was like... I thought you'd miss six or seven. So target one is an easy teal. Target two is a quartering left to right. Target three is a trap, a DTL bird. Target four is a low house. Target four is that big, long, but fairly simple crosser overhead. Yep. Five, low house skeet.
Yep.
Six, 60-yard crosser. Seven.
Edge on.
Yeah, 70-yard. Floppy looper. But complex looper. Like, there's never a point where that's easy. And Lloyd just gets in and smashes every single one. Six is like, both six and seven are very adult targets.
Yes.
Yeah. It was
but scary. Then Johnny stepped up the plate, did the exact same thing.
That was, I felt the pressure though, mate. It was like one of those things. I'm sure. You know when you've got to concentrate and then you concentrate? It was like Bruce was saying, when you actually pay attention and some things fall into line, because I had at that point had a cup of tea and a slice of cake and woke up a little bit.
Johnny definitely suffered from a surfeit of alcohol the night before, shall we say, on the sport.
Well, yeah, so I saw my old man for the first time in 18 months. And so me and my old man stayed up until Cracker Sparrow's bar drinking and chatting shit.
I'd done a fair bit of gin the night before as well, so I wasn't in the best of health. We both did, shit together at the Liberty Hall.
Probably one of the hardest sporting layouts I've ever been on the next day.
You don't want to turn up hungover.
But they were great targets, though. They were really, nice. There was nothing that you shot that you felt cheated by. They were all hittable.
I felt cheated by myself at the whole time.
Hang on a minute. Explain that. An edge on 60-yard crosser. It sounds like a terrible target.
Oh, no. That was in the pro sporting. In the 100 registered, it was everything was killable if you paid attention.
Yep.
If you paid attention.
Yep. I think the winning score was a 94, Johnny. I don't know if you checked, but the winning score was a 94.
But that was after they had dressed it down a bit, correct?
They did, yeah. They did fettle a couple of targets, yeah.
Yeah, because some of those pairs, as much as they were hittable, you just needed to be godlike.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there was some, and I know we spoke to John afterwards, funnily enough, and the exactly what he what he'd aimed for when he'd set them up. Like in terms of, I want this one to make you argue with your mates about how to shoot this. And that was exactly what, we didn't argue, but like we both shot it the same way after looking at it. And then Johnny went, I bet you that's different. And then proceeded to nail it the other way around.
After struggling for three pairs.
Yeah.
So but, no, that course was tasty. Bywell is actually a really very nice ground.
It is.
It's a long way away.
Yeah, well, for you, well, but it's an hour for me.
For anybody inside of 3 hours to go and shoot that pro sporting is worth it.
Oh, definitely.
Go and shoot that challenge. I mean, I understand it's to go and shoot potentially 14 shots.
It's on again in July. Mm-hmm. It's the last of the qualification and then the final. And the final is accompanied by a barbecue, stroke drinks or whatever in the evening. And it's a good laugh because I'll be comparing it with John. And there'll be a bit of like piss takery, shall we say, with the contestants. So
I can imagine it's right up your street, Bruce. You go there and just shoot.
Oh, you boss it.
Yeah.
But you boss it from the fucking hip.
As you learnt, Lloyd, it's easy to straight one portion of that shoot.
Well, the following weekend, when it was actually, the weekend of the, like we went on the Thursday and went up that weekend. And I was shooting a review with one of my review guns. And I realised that I didn't have any B-roll. I didn't have any footage of me shooting the gun. I was like, feck, and it was towards the end of the day. So I just chucked a tenner at, like, Ray and went, here, just give us a ticket for this and I'll get some footage. Shot the single, missed two, shooting the feckin' singles. But I wasn't really concentrating and I'd not shot this gun that much, like, because I'd been shooting my Perazzi a bit. I'd not shot the Zolly. And the first few targets, I was just getting behind it again. You know, when you switch guns, the triggers are different, like breaks at a different weight and it's a different balance. So I dropped a couple of the simple bloody crosses. And then I got behind it then and then shot the time round and cleaned it. Right. I was over the moon.
As you should be. Like, that is a real test of skill.
There is
a video on Bywell's website, YouTube channel, and you can go and actually see it. You can see the layout. Our video will be out probably after the final is done because Clay Tours only happen every 3 weeks on the channel. Depressingly. And we're ahead because I'm trying to be clever and planning things.
But if you watch my Zolly review, the footage of me shooting in that is me straight in the pro sport. So.
Hence the air punch at the end.
Absolutely, yeah. so I've done that. We did the Zolly review, which has pissed off a lot of American Zolly owners, apparently. Tough. I've done a stalk. I got a stalk in, which I'll tell you about in a sec. And fabulous news. So after only 10 months of waiting, the FEO came round to see me and I have been theoretically waiting, pending the paperwork, approved for my firearm certificate. So I'm waiting for the paperwork to be done.
Yay. Boys, gentlemen.
Woo, woo, woo. So yeah, I'm very, very much looking forward to spending a ton of money on a lot of new things. got a stalk on the other day. I'd mentioned to John that I was nearly out of venison. And he went, oh, let me get you out, sort of thing, and said no more about it. And then on like a Friday afternoon, I was at work. John just texted me and says, what are you doing tonight? And I was like, oh, I'm out. He says, oh, we're going to get a book. I was like, get in. So I says to Mrs. P, are we doing that? You like, darling? And she was like, no, what are you thinking? I was like, we'll go and get some venison. She was like, ideal, off you pop. So booled up to see John. He'd said, look, where we are, the rape's up. We're probably not going to get much of a stalk into this bit of woodland because the rape's too high. We're not going to see anything. So we'll go for the high seat. So we went and got in his high seat and basically sat waiting. And the usual thing when you're in a high seat, a bit of banter, blah, blah, glassing the woodland. And we sat there for a good while, glassing the woodland, nout. And then a rustle. And literally a buck ran out like 10 metres. Not even from the hide. I ran into the rape, looked around, obviously saw the coast was clear sort of thing, and then ran back into the woodland and a doe came out and proceeded to feed out from the side of the woodland edge from about 10 yards, honestly, up to about 100 away from the hide. Now, over the course of this, while she's feeding, there's a buck, and we think there was actually another buck, a juvenile, in the woods next to them, but they weren't coming out. This doe was just happily coming out and feeding. So she's getting her head down, and I'm like moving the rifle because I've got the rifle out to the right hand side where I'm expecting the deer to be. So I'm like moving the rifle at like 1 millimeter a second to get it in and then out the other side where we can get a bead on. Eventually got it out, got it down. And then I think John timed it. I sat for, I think, 12 or 13 minutes just waiting, watching this doe feeding. And as she fed, the buck just kept coming out, and just you could just see a shoulder or a corner of an antler or like a leg. And he was just obviously keeping an eye on her. And then eventually he popped out to have a feed. And he didn't pop out much. It was like he popped out. He was rear on. John was like, the next shot's maybe on, but it's up to you. And I was like, I don't fancy it. I'll wait for it to turn.
This was Texas hard shot. Done.
Well,
I was waiting for the turn. I saw a quarter of an antler, and I'm like, why didn't you shoot it?
Yeah.
So eventually, anyway, he turned, and he was, in fairness, he was very timid. So he turned broadside on, heading back into the woodland, and about 115 yards, took the shot, and it was a 270, so I didn't see the recoil. But I didn't see the animal. I took the shot. John said, you got him. So we waited, climbed down, moved down to where I'd shot him, because I'd spotted like a particular tree that was next to where I'd shot him. No sign, no blood trail. I was like, oh, Christ, have I missed? No, John was like, no, you've hit him. She says, look, I'll go back to the little Andy at the farmhouse. We'll get the dog and we'll set away. So he nipped off back to get the dog. I waited looking for a blood trail. I was all over like sort of a 20-yard box trying to find a blood trail. Couldn't find now. Eventually John got back with the dog set away. There must have been deer sign everywhere because it was like deer A1 where the side of this woodland there was loads of deer trails, so the dog was skittering about all over the place. We walked around for about 10 minutes covering this bit of woodland and sorting out, like, and John went, just go and get the thermal and just have a scout around and see if you can see it. And honestly, as soon as I got the thermal, I looked, the deer was like about 10 yards from where it hit, and it had gotten to the bole of a tree 10 yards into the woodland and dropped.
How small they are when they ball up.
Well, that's the thing. They are like genetically adapted to disappear. And that was the thing. It just disappeared.
Fascinating evolution, isn't it?
Funny that.
But there it was. There it was. 10 yards. Hadn't got far. We pulled him out. He was 13.5 kilos. So yeah, second buck. I'm over the moon.
Well done, mate. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. So yeah. I pick up the meat tomorrow.
You got his head on the wall yet?
No, well, that's the next job. We're going to do a Euro mount. That and the first one I shot, which was still in velvet. So,
are they going to be behind you on that wall behind you? Or I suppose you have official meetings.
I'm going to donate the one in velvet to the gun room, because there's a rack of them in the gun room. I'm going to put that one in the gun room, and the other one I'm going to have for home.
Nice. Yeah. Very nice.
So, yeah, that's been my period of... Well, I haven't been on the pod. I've been doing a lot of shooting, which has been absolutely fucking great.
I mean, you've missed out probably the best part of the last 3 or 4 weeks since we last recorded.
Go on.
The sandwich.
Yes, of course. Of course.
Oh, we kept this sandwich from you, mate. Oh, really sorry.
Yes. So after shooting the clear tour at Bywall, we went to the Anglers, which is the local pub at Weldon Bridge, just near Bywall. Had some lunch, and it's the first time I've been to a pub in 18 months, maybe longer.
Had half a shandy and got absolutely steaming. Oh, proper yeah. Embarrassment.
Oh, yeah, I was like...
chasing really the barmaids. It's just disgusting.
What's going on, Sheila's? I haven't been out in bloody ages. Oh, smell the skirt.
They brought the menu out, and it was like the evening sort of dinner menu sort of thing, and it was all looking a bit heavy for a... I mean, it was about 3 o'clock, I think it was.
And it was a steaming hot day as well. It was scorching.
It was red hot.
Scorchio.
So we were like, oh, have you got like a light bites or a lunch menu around? And they're like, oh,
it was about 18 degrees, yeah.
Brought the lunch menu out, and we all clocked this sandwich. I think it was the Brooklyn Hero.
The new Brooklyn Hero sandwich or something.
We all had the same thing.
It was the tits. Pastrami, salami, ham, mustard, mayo, lettuce.
Jeez.
Oh, mate.
Please tell me it had pickles on it.
Yeah,
yes, it did.
Pickles, yeah, it had pickles.
It had all the shit with chips.
It was juicy yet meaty. Oh. The bread was good quality bread. Oh, mate, it was amazing.
The Anglers at Weldon Bridge, everybody. If they're looking for any... Influencer-style shit going on.
Yeah, mate, this is like Hexile all over again. Right, absolutely. Eddie. I would definitely... I mean, it will be a highlight. Next time I go up, I will stop for that sandwich. Well, there's a lot riding on it now.
Yeah, fair dues.
What if it was like the part-time chef and he was like, fuck it, we might as well just finish the packets of all these ingredients and make a fatty, not make, you know, the standard diet sandwich.
Well, here's some news. I think the Anglers might be doing the food... at Bible coming soon.
As long as that sandwich is part of the deal. I'd go back to Bywell. The clays were good. The competition was all right. The clubhouse is amazing. The gun shop is next level.
It's epic, isn't it?
But I don't care because I just want the sandwich.
Driven further for a sandwich, in all honesty.
Like, it's 7 hours for that sandwich, one way.
You've driven Sash further said it was the best sandwich he'd ever had.
I think it's probably one of the best sandwiches I've ever had. Like, that was exceptional. For a pub sandwich, epic.
Top sandwich game. Come to Northumberland, folks. It's fucking mint.
You say that, then I was in Hertfordshire yesterday. I had a katsu chicken burger, which essentially was a piece of fried chicken fillet, proper southern fried, chucked in a sandwich with some mayo, a brioche bun, with katsu curry sauce poured all over it.
That sounds all right. Like,
it was dirty, mate. It was delicious.
Mm.
But it's in the burger category, not the sandwich category.
When did we become a fucking food review channel?
After having a cake suburbia on, we're all food obsessed. It's addictive fattiness. Yeah.
So that's been my time. Johnny, what have thou been up to?
Well, I did do something before Bywell. I can't remember what it was. Something uninteresting, probably. We did Bywell. And then I drove over to Cumbria. And filmed a piece for the Why We Hunt / Trophy Hunting films that we're doing at the moment.
Which I'm very much looking forward to seeing.
So am I. The Trophy Hunting one is coming together nicely. It's a lot easier than a Why We Hunt film. Why We Hunt's a difficult bastard of a thing. We stayed up in a relatively exciting hotel, but this head stalker, who has 90-odd thousand acres of a professional full-time employed stalker, was like, do you want to come out tonight? And I'm like, yeah, I'll come out. So we sat on a bit of Clearfell. That was a bit of fun. And we got there. It was a little late, to be fair. By the time we got over there, because we drove over Hadrian's Wall. That's how far north Lloyd is, everyone. Hadrian's Wall.
Built to keep
is that
the
where the White Walkers
out.
Are?
Yeah, basically. White Walkers.
Yeah, yeah. But the road goes over to the north of it. And I stopped. I was like, I don't want to. I should turn around. We can't cross into Scotland. I understand it's not the official border.
It's not Scotland.
It is in my head. Right. It's basically Scotland. Like, you're basically Scotland. Yeah, that was quite cool. Sat on a bit of Clearfell. We pulled up and there was $3 out. It was like 6:30 in the evening, 7 o'clock. There was $3 just sat there in the sun on this regen. And he goes, we're a bit late. I'm like, yeah, we are. But it was nice. We sat in the high seat, proper German high seat, and had a conversation for a few hours. And right on last light, like, two little twins walked out, little bucks, ran down the banking in front of us. And he goes, shoot that one in the face. Didn't say quite like that. So I said, okay. So we shot it in the face. That was my first Northumbrian buck, which is a bit of a treat, bit of an honor. Like, the views up, it was like Cumbrian buck. The views in Cumbria next to the Lake District are the tits. Like, there's
totally.
All of that Eden Valley area between. Yeah, that's particularly nice. And then came home. And then the next week, went back up into the North York Moors, filmed a bit. Then shot another clay tool at Humberside Shooting Ground, which is cool. It's one of those shooting grounds that every stand has 5 or 6 traps. So you can shoot them in whatever combination you like. You can shoot it as a fantastic thing. They'll have, most of them have 2 or 3 stands to the buttons as well. So you can actually move around and shoot all those targets from different positions. It's good, like, proper fun shooting ground. It's interesting, the more that I'm going around, the more I'm learning about course setting or course.
Yes.
Setting. And how there is a very different style. Some are.
Are you finding it's like north south, or are you finding it's just different grounds?
Even shoot to shoot. So, Humberside was very much coined by edge on targets.
Mm-hmm.
And on a sunny day, an edge on target where the top half just disappears is such a bastard. And as such, like a lot of the targets there, even the ones you could see, most of them were very deceptive. A lot of middies on the course. Most things looked like they needed a heap, but most things really didn't need a lot. So it's a very deceptive course for that. And it's clearly that course setter style is designed in my head to make you think that you need to boot through stuff when actually you just need to wind back. And that's how you were crunching them. That was quite cool. A good fun day out. Humberside is definitely worth a visit. A good fun, like I say, a shooter's ground. It's not, it is quite big. I say it's not big. I remember when I first went there like 5 or 6 years ago, I was amazed at how big it was by Southern standards. Right. But I'm spoiled now. Yeah. And as such, I shall continue to be a spoiled, entitled prick. what else? Holtz?
Oh, yes.
Holtz have...
Tell us about those two...
Bobby Boucher's.
Yeah, what the shit? They were Claude Boucher. Intriguingly.
Yeah, so
Bobby Boucher.
That guy's like a watchmaker, engineer.
Yeah, and they were a bizarre thing.
He's made 7 guns, and all of them are insane.
Yeah.
They're all...
Your description of a gun built by a man who's had a gun explained to him over the phone was, I think, probably the best, because it did have that feel of, okay, this is a gun, this is how they normally work. And he's gone, all right then. And then just gone to town with the pencil.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, no, but no concept of the scale of what it should be.
Yeah. Yeah, because they were... You could tell you took the picture, like, oh, fucking hell.
Like, 21 to and 24 pounds. Yeah. A 24-pound double rifle.
I mean, they were men's calibers, but still.
Yeah, 460 Nora. Weatherby Mag and 500 A-square.
Yeah.
Ooh.
No, they're insane. But you think
that's going to make a mess of a roadie.
One of them, definitely. The first thing I thought was like, how do I get ammunition for this bad boy? We go and shoot. Like, so many mud jack up in Norfolk. It's disgusting.
Shoot a car.
Yeah. A trophy car. Gold medal car.
Well, as you can see, this is a Vauxhall Astra I shot last year.
Yeah. Well, that'd be a hell of a trophy room, wouldn't
it? Mount the headlight.
I can't really explain them other than to say I love them, but not as guns. Like, just as things, they were delicious.
Yes.
As guns, there is no way.
Piece of the engineer's craft.
Definitely. Considering the first one was made like 1984, 1985, and it had a single piece billet rifle barrel.
Oof.
Nowadays, long form do it. It's not that complicated. With modern CAD, you just design it, stick it in a machine. The machine makes it, more or less. Back then, that is proper engineer built out of a single piece. And they had CAD, but it's nowhere near what we have now.
That's a guy on a lathe doing the little wheels.
Yeah,
and if he messes one of those little wheels up,
sat there on a mill, just taking it pass by pass by pass.
Yep.
So how was the rifling cut, or was it hammered, or
so? Do you know? The barrels were made to his spec by a local aerospace. Everything else is made by him in his workshop.
Yeah, you mentioned that. Yeah,
I think he's a watchmaker, engineer sort of thing. So he's clearly got a quick workshop, but he doesn't have the tooling to make these barrels as single board pieces.
Yeah.
And then he rifles them himself. So I presume they're button cut, would be my guess.
Yeah.
I don't think they're designed to use, particularly. They don't feel good. They're not like that tactile in the hand.
Did they look like they'd had any use? Because, I mean, judging by the video, they look like they'd hardly been shot, if at all.
I doubt they've ever been used, ever, apart from maybe in proof.
Right.
But they're still super duper tight. Like, they are just so unique. But they've got the biggest sealed bid, and they held 600 lots out of it because there's just shy of 4,000 in there, so they thought that was enough. And because the mainsail is full, there's a lot of mainsail-y sort of stuff that made its way into the sealed bid, so there's some really juicy stuff in there. Needless to say, the 100 guns at Holtz Videos, the 100 guns is currently sat at an hour 20, and it's about halfway through. And the 100 bargains is probably going to be about a 3-hour saga. Like, they were just huge, huge sales. So they're going.
When is the sale?
22nd. No, yeah, 21st, 22nd.
Of
how does
June?
The sealed bid work?
25th, 26th. It's some June. Point. Yeah, soon. Right. And the sealed bid is 1st of July.
How does this sealed bid work?
Sealed bid is you just put a bid on it, and if you put the highest bid in, no one else knows what else is bid, you win it. There's an estimate and a reserve. So if you want to put a low offer in, you might not win it. It's a gambling game. Yeah.
Right. However, do you know the reserve on everything? Or is it unknown reserves?
I mean, like with most auctions, you could say it's the lower estimate less a little bit is usually reserve, isn't it? Some of them have no reserve, of course. Some of them have no reserve. But
Cod4 GTZ won two or three the last time they had an auction. I'm sure he was waiting on.
He got a Gibbs box lock 3-inch. That's real. I shouldn't be discussing someone else's guns. It's not my person. It's not my space. But, yeah, he won a couple of really lovely guns. But there's some spankers in this sale. There's a 223 single shot bullpup stalking rifle.
Oh, you fucker.
£200 or £300. Wicked. Like you open up the butt plate to put the cartridge in and close the butt plate and then you cock it.
Oh, that's cool.
It's just, 24-inch long overall length. So it's just minimum legal length. It's wicked.
Is it threaded though?
Yeah, the only duff thing with it is the threading looks a bit guff.
Oh, well. You'd always have it recut.
Yeah, as I say, you'd need to have it recut to a smaller thread because you can't shorten that barrel down realistically, legally.
Yeah.
So you'd need that threading recut or cut over, moderate it, put a scope on it, and then just go and shoot all the muntjac with your
tiny.
I'm holding my fingers apart for the audio visual effect. The tiny little gun, but yeah, that was a serious sale.
You always have starry eyes when you come back from a Holtz video. You really dig it, don't you,
mate? Being in a room with a load of guns that you can't afford but dream to own.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that's literally it. This sale, if I'm going to be picky, the main sale doesn't have many quality over-and-unders. It has a lot of quality over-and-unders, but usually there's a few like SOs and really juicy things. This time there's only a small handful. A FAMARS with an olive wood stock. 20-bore FAMARS, olive wood, straight hand stock. I understand that both of you probably won't like that, but no. I thought that was wicked. Yeah, thanks for giving me the little autistic thumbs up, Lloyd. Yeah, mate, Holtz was cool. And then, before that, I went to Holden and Holland Shooting Ground for the release of the Beretta Ultra Leggero.
Oh!
Well, we've decided we're not calling it that. We're not calling it that.
The Ultra Lego. Refused.
You're not going to put it
the Ultra Lego.
Okay, so the Ultra Lego Leggero. See, we've had a relationship counselling thing going on inside of the Broken Gun chat over the Ultra Leggero.
The Ultra Lego has rubbed me the wrong way, I must admit.
Tell us what you think. Have you seen one in the metal yet?
I haven't seen one. So my opinion is completely invalid. It is my thoughts only. I haven't shot one either. So once again, it becomes even less valid, this opinion. But I feel it's, you love it, Johnny, because of what you can do with it.
I love it for two reasons. Firstly, from what cool custom shit you could turn that into as a sporter. And because it actually a steel action lightweight gun. Alloy action lightweight guns are just 90% of the time complete dog shit.
So I feel in that aspect, you love it for what you could do with it, not the way it comes out of the box, which is...
No,
the way it comes out of the box is designed for such a small minority of the population.
Well,
that I feel
Europeans.
Yeah, 10 of them.
In your country, though, that's the thing. That's designed for a market that doesn't exist in the UK, in my opinion. We don't do the kind of walked up shooting that they do in the States, where you get your dog and your truck and you go walking for fucking 50 mile to go and look for some partridge that just doesn't exist.
The Guarini Magnus Light is one of Guarini's best-selling models. There's a lot.
So in one aspect, I do like it. I like it because it's customizable and it is cool. And yes, you could put another stock on it. And yes, you could put some titanium side plates on it.
Yes, with baby, whatever you want. Talking. On it. Yes, but little kangaroos. Little engraved kangaroos, mate.
It's not, as it comes out of the box, it's not a clay gun. It's not even a driven day gun. It's barely sitting on a light driven gun. Day. Oh. You're putting heavy loads through a light gun. It's not enjoyable at all.
It is a very niche tool.
It's extremely niche, which is my problem with loving it for what it is it is ultra niche. Now, loving it, why you love it is because it's customizable.
Yeah,
is completely off the spectrum of why they made that gun.
There's a lot of cars I love. Out of the box, I don't love them. But once they've had some titty, rude boy tuny bits stuck on them, I like them. I'd say the same for that gun.
So, for me, it's the Brenner have been brave enough to do something, the concept of which may evolve into something interesting.
So that's a good way to look at it. Yep.
That is, okay. if they've got the money, which they do, and the foresight to be able to do something with a gun that is that interesting and that different, that to me means give it, you know, a few years, and like mainstream clay guns, you may be able to order with custom cut different side plates that go in them in various materials. And if you imagine, as you said, titanium with different levels of anodizing on it in whatever color you want, or aluminium or whatever, in like bonny different engraving patterns that are genuinely different from Acanthus or Bloody Game Scenes, which that is. And I do genuinely appreciate, I like the way that the black on black catches the light. It is,
yeah, it that is was a pretty nice design. It's
yeah,
a really
it nice is.
Design.
The fact
I'd
it's
love
plastic,
to see that in person.
Mm. Yeah, I have seen one and I've handled
it. Bit tacky, but that's my personal opinion.
In the metal, you can't really tell. It looks well. It really, when you look at it, black on black, with the way that the light catches it, it looks really smart. Balance-wise, I agree with you. It's not a gun I'm ever really going to want to shoot. But
I feel like I need to be sitting at a table here with a little sign that says, I hate the Ultra Lego, change my mind.
Brucey Crowder here today.
Well, I don't think I can change your mind. I don't think I will get you to like the Ultra Lego. But maybe in 3 years' time, the gun that uses some of the technology from the Ultra Lego, maybe you'll like that.
The 692,
I love that idea.
Ultra variable, whatever it's called.
Yep.
It would be cool.
As someone who loves to customize guns, how cool would it be? I've always wanted to have a go at engraving. Now, grabbing my Parazzi out of the cabinet and just going to town with an engraver on it, it's probably not something you're ever going to want to do. But if you could buy a blank plate for the side of a gun, have a bit of a go yourself, or have, how easy is it to ship those off to an engraver, have them done in another country, and send them back, and you've got yourself a custom.
I don't know what engraving's like in Australia, but I expect it's harder than in England.
It doesn't exist.
We've got some of the best engravers in the world. They are, however, a big weight, and they are a few quid. And to be fair, there are some who are less money and less weight. But if you want something particularly special, let's say you wanted your wife's face, the answer is to either send it to Italy or to Asia, and you could have that done for a fraction of the price very quickly. To send your gun there is a logistical nightmare. To send a plate in the post, who cares?
So I do love that aspect, absolutely, where I get it, they have to make the technology now and proof it and see how it all works for future stuff, which could be kind of cool.
It's interesting.
Definitely. That whole aspect of, because you could send plates to Uzbekistan, and there's probably some fantastic engravers in some weird little country.
Yeah, some Uzbeki
there's some amazing
engravers
in Mexico. Yeah, you could send some stuff to Mexico to get done and not have to send gun parts.
No, well, you definitely wouldn't class them as gun parts when you put them in the post.
No.
Yeah, piece of metal. But yeah, like I said, I think Beretta have been really brave to do something different, which we've all been asking for. I've been saying for ages that, like, the not the standard of engraving, but like the what is engraved on guns for a long time now has been like
boring.
Solid, boring, same thing.
Oh,
we'll get to that,
Johnny. Good segue.
This is where I'm headed. This is where I'm headed, mate. I'm already ahead of you. Beretta, have
we allowed to talk
enough
about that yet? Can we talk about that yet?
Yeah, by the time this goes out.
So the fact that Beretta have been brave enough to do that, I think is awesome. And I think it may turn into something really interesting in the future. However, speaking of properly cool custom engraved guns, Johnny, can you tell us anything interesting?
So, the Longthorn. me and Jim had a conversation a while ago, essentially saying exactly the same thing of game scenes are dead. Mm. Like, well, they are to me. Like, you should be, as the cutting edge gun maker of the UK, coming up with cutting edge engraving. I'm a big fan of the Kolar Ferrari gun, the Pravati Gladiator. Like, there's some wicked engraving out there. And these people tap them as a one-off. And I'm like, why is that a one-off? This should be something that is accessible to the masses, or at least in some form accessible to the masses. You're not going to get a handy engraved Pravati for accessible money.
Krieghoff do it every year, don't they? They do the gun of the year. And I love that it's so different. It's not shooting stuff.
Yeah.
They did a gun of the year a few years back that was an Australian themed gun. It had the Sydney Opera House on it.
Why not, mate?
Yeah, exactly. It's cool.
With modern laser engraving, it's, you know, I was chatting and having a little play with some of the design tech. I reckon 10 days you could come up with an adequate design. Maybe if you said, I'm going to budget an entire month to make something really cool, so all of the intricacies were there, you knock out a couple of prototypes. Because the time in the engraver is minimal. It's the design time to get it all vectored and really nice. That's the hard part.
Yeah.
Like, so there's no reason that you couldn't have something wild. So I asked Jim a long time ago to make I suggested he make one with Spitfires on it. I suggested he make one with British race cars on it. The Spitfire one I like personally for a lot of reasons.
Yep.
And so he then, whilst I went there to pick some chokes up on the way up to Lloyd, because I thought having slightly more open chokes would help when I was absolutely hangover.
Then forgetting to put them in the gun.
And then I was too fucked to even change them, mate. But at the end of the day, I was like, I can't even be bothered to screw these out. I've sent you both the pictures, I think, so far. If not, I'll send them over now.
He's flicking through.
Yeah, they're coming through. Boom, the broken gun. So I've had a little play dissecting certain photos, paintings and pictures from my favourite bits to put together just a couple of concept side plates. And then they will rip those apart, vectorise them and turn that into an engraving pattern.
Nice.
I've sent you the base plate as well, I think, he says.
I've only got the side plates at the minute.
Oh, cool. I'll send you over.
Wow.
I did. Where is it? Sent it to
somebody. The world needs more stuff like this.
Well, that's cool.
There's some things I can't talk about on here that I am considering personally that I should talk to you about off air that are, where is it? I've got a picture here somewhere. There you go. The base plate, I've had a few designs of. This is the first design. It's moved on a fairway since here, but I'm going to show it to you anyway. Here it is. Boom. By the way, I'm sending the guys pictures of a Spitfire on a gun.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, I don't like the base plate, but I love the side plate.
That's because it's not got your flag on it, has it? So
it's got a portion of our flag on it.
Yeah, just the little bit you stole off us.
The top left corner that we have to have.
Yeah, well, you have to honour your parents, don't you?
Sometimes. God bless the Queen.
So the Spitfire gun may well become a reality. It may well become a reality. Again, these are just concepts we're flying around. What can actually be turned into actual engraving is obviously very different, so it's not going to look too much like that, but that's what I'd like. I like a Bofors gun. There's some family connection there. I like Spitfires. That's Southampton Dock in the bottom picture, a profile of Southampton Dock, which is
nice. Cool. Nice. With an anti-air gun in the bottom. Yeah, nice.
Yeah,
again, what's the other side? Is that the White Cliffs of Dover?
That is the White Cliffs of Dover. Again, there's an element to this that I think I long want to keep this as a factory pattern, potentially, so having it that other people might want it was part of the brief. If it was me, I'd have a collage of Spitfire stuff. I just slammed all over it. I had a little play with the base plate of actually having the exhaust running down the side over the top of the hinge pins and the air intake under the bottom and some of that stuff. But actually, I think that might be quite hard to come across. Riveted panels sort of on the gun. It's going to be a bit more difficult to pull off.
Yeah.
Without, you know, months and months of design and several
prototypes. It's such a cool idea because it involves the whole car thing. I can't really get on board with putting a car on the side of your gun. But a Spitfire is something that has guns. Mm. It's just a...
James Bond. And you think of them. Had guns.
Yeah, you could put a Bond car on there, and that's the nice Aston, I guess.
An E-type Jag engraved gun? Now you're talking my language.
It would sell. People would be buying it. Now, if you could put that stuff on removable side plates on a Beretta, there you go. We've just solved the world's problems.
Exactly. So this is where that comes from. Like, imagine if you said, all right, well,
just, I have the Beretta custom side plate shop with 1,000 designs. What would you like? I have every plane ever designed. I have every car ever designed. I have all the car logos. It takes no money because a laser engraver is inherently not that expensive to run. They're expensive to buy, and there is a cost in staffing it. But, you know, to hand engrave a gun like that would cost you £40,000 or £50,000, maybe more, to stick it in a laser engraver and pay someone a month to do it, plus the laser engraver being sat idle for that time if you really weren't doing anything else. It's gonna cost you well under 10 grand to have that gun designed, built, and that you could probably afford the gun in part of that as well. And now you like the ultra Lego.
I'm an open-minded guy, you know.
As we're gonna call
change my mind.
Ultra Harrier Jump Jet Edition. The yes. Ultra Falklands.
Oh Christ.
Belgrano.
Well, we'll definitely sell one of those to Jeremy Clarkson.
There you go. My life would be complete. Gentlemen, I'm afraid I must depart.
Well, I think we've wrapped up a fair bit of what we need to on this one.
Before you go, just a call back to what you mentioned earlier on about the Why We Hunt thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to talk about a discussion, and maybe we'll do it in a future pod, but do remind me. A conversation I've had with a mate of mine after this book I took the other night, I sent him a photo, and it spun this guy out completely. So remind me and we'll talk about it in the future pod.
I reckon Why We Hunt should be a Broken Gun podcast. I'm up for it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a good topic for the next one, guys.
Maybe. Gentlemen, a pleasure. This one's going to be an easy edit. Thank you.
A pleasure. Any recommendations for social media accounts? I will jump in yes, first I and do. Say... Bywell Shooting Ground. I know we recommended them before, but go and check them out. Definitely, you want to go and shoot that. It's 14 bird, ultra fun comp.
Coming up, I think mid-July, I'll have to check. I think it's July 18 is the Sport Trap weekend, which is going to have the Pro Sport and Final and barbecue and drinks, etc. in the evening. So it'll be a good weekend. And I'll be there. So I'll be there if you maybe don't want to go. You can
get your nipples signed by the Lord Patterson.
You never know. I'm going to say Sean Hughes Engraving. So this guy is an engraver in the UK that's got a YouTube channel and he's on Instagram, etc. I bought my wife a 2p that is a Canthus scroll engraved on the Queen's face.
Oh, that's awesome.
For our Copper wedding anniversary. Well, I can't remember. Is it the 10th that you did Copper? So I bought this Tuppence that's beautifully, like, fine acanthus scroll engraved. I'll post a photograph on Instagram so you can see it. It's delicious. And this guy posts all of his engraving on YouTube. And he's gone from, like, doing quite trad stuff to getting more and more and more kind of out there with his engraving. So that's a really interesting channel if you're into that sort of thing. Bruce, have you got it, mate?
I have got one. This one is along those lines of fine things that are made really well. But I do love a good knife. And this guy is an American bloke. Greg Lightfoot 123 makes some of the nicest knives I have ever seen. Maybe they're my taste, but the craftsmanship is absolutely phenomenal. You can find him on Instagram and there is just constant knife porn pics. It's a lot of Damascus stuff. Nice. A lot of mammoth ivory scales. It's just right up my alley. Really nice wood, if he's got wood scales. So Greg Lloyd
remembers hunting.
1, 2, 3.
A
mammoth, just, yeah.
In the very distant past. I mean, it's been a while. With just a stick.
Yeah, and now finally, that was when you actually applied for your fire certificate.
Yes, it was just about then that I applied. Yeah. Awesome. Thanks, Bruce.
Perfect. Brucey. Mate.
There you go.
Thank you for waking up at 3 a.m. once again, Bruce.
My pleasure, mate. My pleasure.
You guys indeed. Listening do not appreciate, but we're recording this at, we started about 9 p.m. That's like daft o'clock in the morning for Bruce. But he gets up to make this with us. Bless him. And we appreciate it.
It's an absolute. I do enjoy these. It's fun to do. if it makes the drive for someone else just that hour shorter, then because they've zoned out listening to a podcast, so be it. It's great.
Oh, I'm going to chuck a recommendation on the podcast for our next podcast, whether it be Why We Hunt. We should get a sports psychologist on the podcast.
Oh, yes. Actually, the other thought I thought the other day for another for a feature is we should get a bladesmith on.
That would be cool.
It would be like a percussion. Then you say, can you make a blade on the podcast? Ding, 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 yeah, maybe, ding, ding.
Maybe not make one live on air, but like let's talk to one.
Oh, well, yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah, fair comment.
Maybe we could put up a poll on the Broken Gone Instagram page. What would you like to see next? A sports psychologist, a bladesmith, or maybe an engraver? We could try and find an engraver.
There's quite a few good ones. I was going to say there's a guy called SLS Engraving. I should have shouted him out. Like he's just started his gun engraving business, and he's really very, very. He's one of the best fine scroll people I've seen in a long time. Really, very good. Engraving is cool.
Yeah, it is.
Very good.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you very much indeed, and thank you for listening, everybody. I've been Lloyd Patterson.
I've been Johnny
Carter. Oh, I've been Johnny Carter.
Are we fucking famous yet?
See you next time, guys.
Joined us for a second.
Ciao, cunts.
Missed you, Eddie.
No, he didn't.
That's true.